Good morning. I'm Commissioner Mark Samulin, Chair of the Land Use and Sustainability Committee. I want to welcome you all to our meeting this morning. It is Wednesday, February 17th. I am delighted and honored to be joined by my colleagues, Commissioner Arriola and Commissioner Gongora. Also a special guest, Commissioner Minor is with us as well. We have many members of the city administration, including our Assistant City Manager, Alina Hudak, who is with us. As usual, we have a busy and productive agenda, but part of the reason we do these meetings is to hear from the public. So on each item, if you have a comment on that specific item, please raise your hand or *9 if you've dialed in, and we will recognize everyone for 2 minutes to provide some comment. Just a couple dial-in numbers here. If you're on Zoom, just so you know where you are, it's 8969-763-1969. That's your Zoom number. And then if you're calling in by phone, the toll-free number is 888-475-4499. With that, let me ask Assistant City Manager Hudak if she has any announcements, anything she wants the group to be aware of.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the Land Use and Sustainability Committee. For your information, we have one deferral at the request of the chair. Item 5 is a discussion item, will be deferred. And we have one addendum at the request of the sponsor, Commissioner Gongora, and that's item number 10, discussion regarding an alternative harmonization plan for 959 West Avenue. That concludes any changes to the agenda that I'm aware of. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you for that. And with that, we're going to just take it at the top. As always, if my colleagues have any requests to take things out of order, we aim to do that. But not seeing anything immediately, let's start with item number 1, which is the Ocean Drive MXC land use and zoning amendments. Tom, I'm assuming you're going to help kick us off here.
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. This is an item, just by way of some very brief background, that was referred in October of 2020. And the last time the Land Use and Sustainability Committee discussed this item was at your November 24th meeting. The referral consists of three separate components. One, which we're going to be discussing today, is an amendment to Chapter 142, the MXC Development and Use Regulations. And as you may note in the draft ordinance that has been attached to the memo, this is primarily a cleanup ordinance. However, there are four substantive components that I'm going to talk about briefly. The other two items, one pertains to maximum building heights along Collins Avenue, and the other pertains to parking requirements in the MXC. We're recommending that those be deferred to your March meeting. The reason is that the last time the Land Use Committee discussed this item is that you referred all three components to both the City Commission for discussion at the December 4th meeting, but you also requested that Bernard Zaskovich, who's the city's consultant on this item, take a look at this and that they be looked at by the mayor's Art Deco Cultural District panel. We did make a presentation to the panel regarding the item that's before you today. Also, we have met with Zaskovich regarding all three items, and he indicated that he is going to take a look at it. With regard to the Chapter 142, the MXE Development and Use Regulations, as I indicated, there's four substantive changes that are proposed. The first, and this is the one that has gotten the most discussion, is a proposal to require CUP review for all indoor entertainment. Currently under the code in the MXE district, if you have indoor entertainment and your occupational load is less than 200 persons, you are not required to get CUP approval to add entertainment to your license. You can just add it to your license. If your occupational load is over 200, or if you have an entertainment component in an outside area, that does require CUP. So if it's outdoor entertainment of any kind, regardless of the op load, that has to go get a CUP. And if your indoor area has an op load of greater than 200 persons under the code, you're currently required to get a CUP. This proposal would basically require all forms of entertainment to obtain a CUP. And the reason that we've recommended this is it's part of a larger, more comprehensive strategy. It's not something that we believe in and of itself is going to address all of the problems. But what we have noticed is that indoor entertainment, depending on the operator, can start to become problematic, particularly in these older buildings that don't have the same type of soundproof glass and soundproof doors. They typically have lots of window openings. And so moving forward, this is something that we think could be a very useful tool. The other three items I don't think have been as controversial. One is a prohibition of future stand-alone bars and drinking uses. Currently, there's only two in the area that would be grandfathered in, and we haven't detected a lot of opposition to that. The third one is a proposal to tie rooftop commercial uses to better hotel development and better hotel operation. It would limit commercial rooftop uses to restaurant only and would also require that in order to get a commercial license for a rooftop use, that the hotel be brought up to certain minimum standards and meet certain minimum benchmarks. This would not prohibit a hotel from utilizing a rooftop for its guests. So if they wanted to have a rooftop solarium, if they wanted to have a rooftop deck, if they wanted to have some type of rooftop dining for their guests, then it wouldn't prohibit the guests from using it. Also, it wouldn't prevent the use of rooftops via special event permit. And then finally, we are proposing to expand the types of retail that would be permitted as an accessory use to include artisanal retail and experimental retail as accessory uses. As I indicated previously, we did bring this particular item to the mayor's Art Deco Cultural District panel. We made a presentation at the January meeting. They asked for a little bit of time in order to be able to review the proposal. And then they came back with some comments at their meeting last week on February 12th. They were not supportive of the proposal to require CUP approval for indoor entertainment. And the reason that they said was that for smaller operators who might want to do a less intense form of entertainment, such as a ambient DJ or a piano player or something along that nature, they didn't believe that that type of operator should have to go through the CUP process. And so that was their recommendation. The sponsor of the item has requested that the Land Use Committee provide a recommendation on this. Whatever the recommendation is, he would like to have this item move forward. It was a dual referral. So assuming you make a recommendation today, we would then take your recommendation to the planning board, and then it would have to come back to the commission for two readings. I'm happy to answer any questions, or if you wanted to take public comment first, and if you had any questions after that, I can certainly answer the questions after that as well.
Thank you for that, Tom. That's very helpful. I see Commissioner Areola's hand. So Ricky, you go first.
Thanks, Chair. Tom, at least for me, you're going to have to sort of unpack some of what you went through because it's a lot in here, and we'll get to that. But the one thing that sort of raised my ears was what you just said with respect to getting a CUP for businesses, you know, less than 299. And my concern is, and I know this is well-intentioned, and I believe I understand what the mayor's hoping to achieve here, but as we reconceive the MXC district into an Art Deco cultural district, we got to be careful that we may shoot ourselves in the foot, right? To the extent that we want to see more art galleries, museums, more upscale business establishments, they themselves are going to want entertainment, whether it be a piano, you know, jazz music, DJ, and under our definition of live entertainment, Nick is here, you know, our definition of live entertainment is extremely broad. I've fought against it, and now it's going to come to bear. So a poetry reading, for example, is considered live entertainment. Spoken word poetry, stand-up comedy, book readings are considered live entertainment under our definition. So as we try to reimagine the area, we want to see more things like art galleries, museums, etc. They themselves are going to want to do entertainment for their patrons. And so this would be very cumbersome for those types of establishments. So I'm not in favor of this portion of the legislation.
Tom, if you could, it looks like we're taking the use part and heightened parking is sort of coming down the road, if you will. And it looks like maybe three of the four items are perhaps less controversial. So could we drill down on the item Commissioner Areola teed up about the CUP? And I guess everything he sort of raised, I'm interested in maybe a little crystallization of the definition of entertainment, maybe a little bit of thought on our experience with CUPs under 200 indoors. Have we had issues? What does that look like? Any reaction to the logic shared by the Ocean Drive panel? Could you amplify on that one particular issue, please?
Sure. Commissioner Areola is correct. Our definition of entertainment is very cumbersome, for lack of a better word. It strikes a very broad swath over everything, and it does make it very challenging to create regulations that are specific to types of entertainment. We've had lengthy discussions with the city attorney about this, and based upon the case law, they feel that Nick can jump in at any time. But regulating entertainment by the type of entertainment is something that is not defensible. Because of that, because all forms of entertainment have to be thrown into the same bucket, you can really only create the regulation through occupational loads. Right now under the code, there is no requirement for a CUP for occupational contents indoors that are less than 200. So we don't know what the impact would be. Obviously, if somebody has a very small venue, say the occupational load is only 50 persons, and they want to add something like a piano player, or they want to have a harpist or a violin, something that would be no louder than recorded music, they'd have to go through a three-month process to obtain a CUP. Unfortunately, we can't distinguish them from the 10-piece rock band within a venue that is, say, 185 person offload. And so that's why the proposal was to require a CUP for everything, because that's the only way that you can really regulate what could be a potentially problematic entertainment venue from a venue that's likely not to be as problematic. Because we cannot, under the law, regulate entertainment by the type of entertainment, the occupational content is really the only tool we have. I think that the mayor's Art Deco Cultural District panel, I think they shared the same concerns that Commissioner Areola just expressed in terms of these smaller type of venues that want to do a much less intense form of entertainment, having to go through what could potentially be an expensive and rigorous process just to get that entertainment license. And if we're trying to promote that, that could have an impact on that as well.
And Tom, is there any two follow-ups? First, in terms of what's happening out there today, if it's, you know, someone from code or MBPD that wants to weigh in, do we have real world examples where under 200 is a problem, or we think it could be a problem in the future? So what are we experiencing right now?
I would let police and code go into more detail, but I'm sure there are examples of venues that are not operating within the confines of the law that don't even have an entertainment license. So I'm sure that code has had issues with noise with venues that only have an alcoholic beverage establishment license, but they don't have an entertainment license, yet they're basically operating as an entertainment establishment because of the volume of the music or because of performers. So I think that's always going to be a problem in terms of enforcement. What I do think the difference, though, with having a CUP is that if somebody does not have entertainment on their license, then it's much easier to enforce that, as opposed to trying to enforce whether or not somebody who has entertainment is violating the noise standards. If somebody is engaged in entertainment and they don't have entertainment on their BTR, that's, I believe, a much easier type of violation to remedy. Similarly, if somebody has a CUP for entertainment and they're operating outside the boundaries of that CUP, that's a much quicker mechanism for enforcement by bringing a progress report to the planning board than it is to go through the master process. And so I think what we were looking for were ways that we could have quicker remedies for violators, as opposed to the intent is not to penalize those small operators that want to have the piano player or the harpist. If there was a way that we could regulate entertainment by type, you would have seen it some time ago. But unfortunately, legally, we don't have a way to do that yet.
Yep, Tom, that's helpful. We have a couple folks from the public, so let me just get one more question in, and then if I don't see my colleagues' hands, I'll go to the public next. I am sympathetic to the argument of a smaller venue with the poetry reading, and I know it's not technically in front of us today, but I'm wondering, is there a way to have a fast-track, accelerated CUP process? Is there a way to bifurcate things that are complicated and warrant the 3 months, the extended process, versus things that perhaps might lend themselves to quicker review? Is that something we've explored or could explore? Because it might make us more amenable to this approach.
We could certainly explore a different tier of CUP review. It's something that I would want to talk over with Nick and the members of the city attorney's office to make sure that it's going to be legally sufficient. But the type, I think, of CUP you're talking about is the type of CUP that would be applicable to a use that was, say, proposing ambient music only, whether it be through a performer or a DJ. And perhaps there's reduced notice requirements, reduced fees.
Right.
Typically, if somebody is proposing entertainment at ambient levels, they don't have to produce a sound study because they're going to be at ambient level. So that's going to be less expensive there. But that's something that we could certainly explore with the city attorney and come back to you on that.
I would appreciate that. Let's go to the public. Mitch Novick first, please.
Thanks, Commissioner. I swear and affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. For years, I've appeared before the planning board opposing conditional use permits for outdoor entertainment. Despite my insistence that it is this noise which is thrown into the public realm, which fuels the chaos on our streets, it's you guys, the mayor and commission, who refuse to reel that noise in. It's all directly, causally related to campaign and PAC donations from contributors. And the fact that you've allowed these same businesses, whether it be the Palace with their drag queen performers exposing their breasts in front of children, or music blasting all the way to the shoreline, despite the millions that the city has wasted and loses annually, a net loss tune to millions of dollars annually, subsidizing this the entertainment ADCD. It's time you guys finally address this one issue. I've been appearing for 8 years, regularly, monthly, urging you to do so, and your refusal is very clear. Thank you.
Next speaker is Kent Harrison Robinson. Kent, you're right. Kent, are you with us? Okay, we're going to go to Alex Tachkas. Hopefully, we can loop Kent back so Alex is right.
Wait, I'm on.
Okay, Kent. Kent is first recognized. Go ahead, Kent. Kent, we can't hear you. Are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead, Kent.
Okay, let me turn off the other system I have because I'm having echo now. Okay. I want to thank you very much for allowing me to speak today. My concern is very narrow right now, though I have clients on both sides of the issue involving what is going out on the streets, but I'm more concerned right now about the First Amendment rights and free speech and how overregulation of these internal spaces where there's essentially cultural exposition of people's beliefs and interests are potentially being restricted by undue government regulation. It concerns me that there would be even a consideration that we would impose regulations that would restrict the ability to cite prose, cite poetry in the middle of a hotel lobby. That seems to be extraordinarily restrictive of free speech and a clear demonstration of restriction of free speech. Moreover, whether music is also an expression of free speech, and all the government does have a right to regulate as to time and place, inside, internally in a building seems to be a reasonable place for people to be allowed to express themselves. We have, as far as code concern, multiple other laws on the books to control facilities that are out of control. In other words, to allow and restrict those activities that are clearly within free speech rights in order to avoid the impact of out-of-control operators is not the way to go about regulation. I believe that there should be no CUP regulation of internal operations of under 200 seating. And I think that the best way of regulating that is through other code enforcement mechanisms. It's cheaper, it's more efficient, and there really hasn't been an out-of-control situation internally in buildings that have adversely affected other properties. The only properties it most likely would affect were the people within the building themselves. And if a building is not smart enough to know that you should keep your own building under control, it's not an issue of conditional use regulations. It's an issue of stupidity and the inability of basic laws to control a situation.
Mr. Chairman, 2 minutes are up.
I think we should rely on code enforcement to control and the police to control out of.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate those comments again. We are going to limit comment to 2 minutes. Alex Tachmas, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and board members. For the record, Alex Tachmas, on behalf of the Gesta Group, owner of the Clevelander, the Stiles Hotel, and the Essex. Mr. Chair, you've got many, many items of legislation that are being proposed for MXE. Unfortunately, this is not one of the better ones. You already have a lot of things you're proposing. And frankly, I don't even know why this is continuing to be discussed. This had already come before land use, and I'm pretty sure that Commissioners Areola and Gongora had already voted it down with a negative recommendation. Just a few issues why this is not good legislation. First of all, your own Ocean Drive panel appointed by the mayor has recommended against this. Secondly, the legislation is not needed for multiple reasons. First of all, you already have an indoor entertainment CUP for establishments of 200 people, which is when it really could potentially be an issue. You don't want to have an indoor CUP requirement for any occupancy, which might be 5 people, 7 people, 8 people. The CUP process is very expensive and lengthy, and certainly doesn't make sense for someone to spend $30,000, $40,000 on fees and consultants in order to have indoor entertainment for 5 people. You already have an open air entertainment requirement as well. So if you have a venue with inside noise, but the windows and doors are open, you already have a requirement that they get an open air entertainment license. So this is only for indoor with completely doors and windows sealed. So there really is no good reason to have this. There isn't any sort of overwhelming demand from code that I have seen that points to small venues with doors and windows closed requiring it. And I suggest you vote it down permanently. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tachmas. Jane Krupp is next.
Oh, good morning, everybody. Just a comment on rooftop uses, because I'm on Ocean Drive here, and many of the residents don't want rooftop uses because they are an open-air environment. And so the same, so they really, you know, talk about the noise and the din. Just to follow up on Mitch Novak, we get noise from the roof that we don't have now. So we're going to add on every rooftop more noise, and it's air noise. It's not right-of-way noise. So the only way I would support using rooftops is if for the public use, is if there was a curfew so that these restaurants do not morph into clubs late at night, because that's what's going to happen. So if you could put some kind of curfew on it, I would support rooftop usage for the commercial uses. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment, Jane. Tom, just if you could clarify, what is the specific change contemplated for rooftops, and how might we address the concern that Jane just raised?
Right now, under the code, there's no specific regulations for rooftop uses, other than if you want to have entertainment, that requires conditional use approval. What we've recommended is that rooftop uses be limited, future rooftop uses. This would not apply to any rooftop uses that already have a commercial license, but moving forward, future rooftop uses be limited to restaurants, and that they also be part of an overall hotel plan that includes specific minimum benchmarks. So what we're trying to do is use it as a mechanism for improving hotels. So if somebody operates a hotel and they want to have a commercial rooftop restaurant, they would have to meet certain benchmarks with regard to the improvements of the hotel, the renovation of the hotel. This is not designed for somebody to have like a flop house with $39 a night rooms and then just make all their money on the rooftop. It's designed to be accessory and subordinate to a much better hotel operation.
Thank you for that, Tom. Commissioner Gongora, we haven't heard from you, and then Commissioner Arriola.
Okay, thank you. Interesting dialogue. I was going back and trying to refresh my recollection about this item. It was interesting to me that the committee of people that the mayor appointed to evaluate this kind of agreed with the position that the committee, or at least Commissioner Arriola and I expressed last time, with a concern about adding a CUP for very small, potentially indoor types of events like poetry readings and other things. Most of the people that are concerned about what's going on Ocean Drive are concerned about what's going on outside. I hear a lot of issues, including from my friend Mitch Novak, every meeting about regulating outdoor entertainment. But I haven't had anybody that I could recall coming before us in the last several years complaining about an indoor event. And I think that's generally because people do a good job of regulating their indoor events much better than their outdoor events. And they're going to be concerned and cautious about the types of things they let into their establishments. I don't think that we've had a problem with these types of events. And I'm concerned about adding an extra layer of legislation and red tape that doesn't exist to fix a problem that, to my knowledge, doesn't exist. And I haven't heard any type of factual basis from the administration about some kind of problem with these indoor events that we can't control. So I'm generally not in favor of adding new ordinances to fix problems that I don't hear people complaining of. So I would rather leave off that extra layer of red tape. It does cost a lot of money to get a CUP. We sometimes minimize it when we talk about it, but it does cost a lot of money for people to hire lawyers or lobbyists or professionals to go with them before the planning board. As we know, oftentimes the planning board doesn't pick up a matter for whatever reason and it gets continued. That doesn't mean that the person's obligation to pay their attorneys or professionals gets continued with that. They just end up paying twice or three times or however many times it has to go back. So I think we should leave that part out. That was my recommendation last time, and that continues to be my recommendation today.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. Commissioner Arriola.
Well, first of all, thank you, Commissioner Gongora, for summarizing how I feel. I support what you just said, so let's not belabor that point, subject to comments from the chair, and move on to something else that I think Tom was exploring or explaining to us, talking about rooftop activation. Tom, help me understand how this is crafted, because what I heard you say is the intent of this is to incentivize a hotel operator to invest in their property so that we get rid of these flop houses that exist in the MXE currently, which, you know, I strongly want to see happen. And is this a tool that we're exploring to make that happen?
Yes. Basically what it does, it's under section 142-546, we have a new draft provision that states that commercial uses on rooftops shall be limited to restaurants only and shall only be permitted in accordance with the following. The building shall be fully renovated, including all guest rooms. The building shall have central air conditioning or flush mounted wall units. No air conditioning equipment may face the street. All non-impact resistant windows and doors shall be replaced with impact resistant windows and doors. And any contributing building shall be renovated in accordance with the Secretary of the Interior Standards for Rehabilitation, including public interior spaces. So basically what it does is for those hotels that exist now that don't have a BTR for commercial use on the rooftop that want to add one, it would require that they fully renovate the building.
Okay. I mean, that sounds good to me because it's accomplishing something at least that I want to see happen, which is, you know, some of these rundown hotels to invest substantial money to upgrade the properties. And if this is an inducement to allow them to do that, I definitely would be supportive or at least, you know, strongly inclined to pursue this. I think we need to put more energy into this overall effort to improve the MXE, and that's to tackle the hotel situation we have there. You know, certainly the better properties don't cause problems. We know that. The ones that are, you know, whatever, 50, 60, 80 bucks a night tend to create problems. And so whatever we can do to create incentives for them to invest in the property so that they go more upscale, I think that's good policy. I don't know if this is the right tool, but I'm open to it.
Okay, thank you for that, Commissioner Rowland. And I think we have some consensus at least on maybe three elements. I had a couple thoughts. I do see Alex's hand up. So Alex, do you have an additional comment you want to share? Alex Tatras?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I had to lower my hand. I apologize.
Okay. I just, because we're going to wrap. And Mitch, your hand is back up. We usually go one round, but do you have a quick comment you want to make?
Yeah, regarding the height increases to buildings to incentivize hotel development, I think that's entirely the wrong approach. We have perhaps thousands of new hotels in the pipeline. I think to really change this area, we need to incentivize residential uses and bring back residents to this community, which was once thriving with residents in the entertainment district before it got out of hand with the crazy outdoor entertainment uses, which made it incompatible and problematic for residential living. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, thank you, Mitch. And you make an interesting comment that I want to come back to. Okay, so here's where I think we're at. We're talking about the use. As Tom started us off, there were four elements: the bars, rooftop retail. I didn't sense any objections from my colleagues on any of that, but that we are having a little different view. I have a little different view of the CUP. So what I'd like to see is if we could sort of bifurcate. It sounds like by acclamation on the bars, rooftop, and retail, we could move that forward. Is there any objection from either of my colleagues from doing that? Okay, seeing none, so we have the three pieces by acclamation moving to the commission. Let me just throw to my colleagues that I think you all have raised some legitimate points about the CUP. You know, for example, we've got it at 200. Should it go all the way to zero? Is there some happy medium? I also wonder if this isn't time to have sort of the fast track accelerated CUP. And I'd rather sort of work with this as opposed to kill it. And so I just ask my colleagues, either of them, if there's some middle ground that they would be open to, again, whether a different number with an accelerated CUP. I sense you do not support the proposal as is of the CUP. That was clear. But I will at least put that out there, see if either of you, Commissioner Arriola, go for it.
I mean, one thing I would explore would be our definition of live entertainment. That's one way of doing this. You know, we could do a bunch of things. We could try to have a different fast track for CUP, a different limitation or different definition of live entertainment. I'd be supportive of all of those, but I think our definition of live entertainment is overbroad. I personally think it's unconstitutional. But I'd look at all three.
Okay. So with that, what I'd like to suggest is that we move the CUP to the commission without recommendation on a yay nay of what we've got, but direct the administration to do exactly what Commissioner Arriola just sort of recapped, including the definition of entertainment, a fast track process that we could look and maybe look at that threshold of 200. I know the recommendation is zero. So, you know, let's continue the conversation, but direct the administration, the city attorney, to look at those three. Commissioner Gongora, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I'm a no on this approach. Okay. Respectfully to you both, I think that this is dragging out a process and a vote. I think we should vote no on the CUP for indoor. I think if we want to make a standalone and apart recommendation for administration to explore fast-tracking CUPs, I think that would be a good standalone motion that I would support, because that's something that could apply here or in other instances. And I would like administration to identify all those instances, not just this one. And if Commissioner Arriola wants to do a standalone referral to re-explore how we define entertainment, that can happen as well. But I think it's slowing down this item and complicating it unnecessarily.
Commissioner Arriola, your hand is up. What say you?
Yeah, that's actually what I meant. So confusion, that's what I meant, is to have a standalone.
Okay, so Commissioner Gongora, do you want to restate, or Commissioner Arriola, either of you, what is the motion that you would like to proceed with?
I would make the motion for the Land Use Committee to endorse the Mayor's Art Cultural Committee vision for this item and recommendation that you not require CUPs for indoor entertainment, as we never have. And we agree on all the other points.
Right. So I think we've already moved. Right. So we've already fair enough. We've already moved, just a point of information. We already moved the three, the bars, the rooftop, and the retail. So I think we already did that by acclamation. Okay. So I think the motion then is to not accept the current CUP. Nick, I see your hand up. Did you want to clarify something here?
Commissioner Gongora's motion, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, was to transmit the CUP component with a negative recommendation consistent with the recommendation of the Art Deco Cultural District panel. Is that right, Commissioner Gongora?
Yes, thank you. And I wanted to be clear that is their recommendation also in the motion.
Okay, and Commissioner Gongora, just to be clear, you also talked about the accelerated CUP. You also mentioned the definition of entertainment, which Commissioner Arreola mentioned. Did you have a separate motion on that, or are you leaving that off at this moment?
Okay, as a second motion, I would move that we direct administration to explore an accelerated CUP process and to report back to the Land Use Committee in however much time they need, you know, 2 months, 3 months, mm-hmm. however much time you need to look at it. Instances where you may recommend that we do accelerated CUPs and what such a program would look like.
Okay. So just to clarify then, the first motion is to accept, we'll take these separately, to accept the recommendation from the Ocean Drive panel, which did not embrace the new CUP. I sense that both of my colleagues, that they're supportive of that. I'm willing to continue the conversation. So on the vote not to proceed with the CUP, I'm going to take the other side, but that will pass 2-1 based on the comments I heard. And then Commissioner, on the second motion, Commissioner Gongora teed up the have a separate item on the CUP process. And Commissioner Gongora, sort of friendly motion that Commissioner Arreola had put forward also was to look at the definition of entertainment. Are you okay to have that or not?
I'm not supporting that at this time until I see a proposal, just because we went down that road a couple of years ago and it became pretty intense. I would be open to it, but I would rather, if we're going to do that again, somebody submit it in advance in writing and let me know what it looks like.
Okay. So the motion on the table from Commissioner Gongora is a fast-track CUP and bring that back to land use. I'm supportive. Commissioner Arreola, I see your hand before we vote on that. Did you have something else, or is that a leftover?
It is a leftover, but that's fine. If you don't want to include the definition of live entertainment, I'll bring that back. I mean, Michael, you're an attorney. It's unconstitutional, right? We can go through all the scenarios in which somebody walks into a hotel lobby to read from a book, and that would be live entertainment and struck down. The chilling effect on free speech is obvious, and I want to get this off our books because it's embarrassing that we have it. It's clearly unconstitutional.
I think you raise a good point with the entertainment, Commissioner Arreola, but because we know that this raises red flags throughout the city, this is one of those items that becomes controversial, for lack of another word. I think it's better if we don't bring that one on the fly as a spinoff of this item, and we give people notice if that's coming back up again.
Sure.
Okay. Sounds good. So let's then, unless I see objection, we will also pass Commissioner Gongora's second motion as it relates to a recommendation on the potential for a fast track CUP process that might address smaller audiences, different types of entertainment. And we look forward to those recommendations. Tom and Nick, do you have what you need on this? Tom?
One quick question on the second motion. Commissioner Gongora made the motion. Was there a second from any member of the committee on that motion? Or
I'm happy to second it. I'll second it.
So Commissioner Arreola seconds. And then lastly, Commissioner Gongora, I believe that you want us to come back with a recommendation to fast track all CUP applications, right? Not just a certain type.
I'm not directing you on how what your recommendation be, whether it's all or some. My motion is to direct you to review the CUP process. We were going to carve out this specific CUP for indoor entertainment on Ocean Drive. I don't know. There may be others that you think should move at a different pace and level of complexity. So I want you all to come back to us. We certainly hear that CUPs are expensive and difficult. And frankly, maybe in some cases they should be, where there's a danger that that entertainment or noise level could be harmful for the community. But maybe there's other instances. This is one where perhaps we may want something as a less stringent process. So I want you to review the process and come back and recommend to us what you think we should do with it.
Okay. And Nick, we'll just have, if it's okay, Nick, we'll just bring this back as a separate standalone item. And I'm thinking we'll bring this back to you probably at your April land use committee so that we have enough time to go through this. Yeah, okay.
Okay, that's great. Colleagues, I think mission accomplished. I just want to close because we didn't go down the path of the height and the parking. That wasn't sort of the intent. I do want to sort of underscore the comment Mitch Novick said about residential, and I want to provide that input for the next conversation. I don't think we need to belabor it. I just want to say what I think he said was smart. I think having more pedestrians on the streets, I think having residents is good. You know, frankly, I think we got lots of hotels. Hotels are good, but we seem to have lots of them coming. And so I would like just to make part of that next discussion the idea of incenting good residential to bring people to back to that area. So with that said, let's go to item number two. Commissioner Arreola, this is parking reductions in the MXC, somewhat related to what we were just talking about. Do you want to tee it up or would you like Tom to do so?
Yeah, I'm going to ask Tom to tee it up. But again, this is trying to, you know, help reimagine the MXC district and to try to make it more, you know, make it easier for property owners to renovate and invest in their properties without triggering very expensive parking requirements. And so I think Tom can walk us through how that should work.
Sure. This particular ordinance that's before you, as the commission or as the land use committee may recall, this was bifurcated from the larger item that was considered at first reading on January 13th. And originally, this was a piece of legislation that included both the Harding Town site area as well as the MXC area in South Beach. At first reading on January 13th, the commission approved the Harding Town site portion of the legislation and then bifurcated the MXC portion and referred that back to the Land Use Committee. Last week, the commission, just as an aside, approved on second reading the proposed parking reductions for the Harding Townsite area. The other thing that the commission mentioned in its discussion on January 13th is rather than applying this parking reduction to all new construction within the MXC area, that would include things like a CVS or a Walgreens, that we'd be more strategic in terms of the application. So we've revised the ordinance so that the ordinance is now only applicable to hotel and residential uses within the MXC district. And this is, again, to incentivize strategically those types of uses. And so it would not apply to standalone retail or standalone commercial. With that change, we think it does address some of the concerns expressed by the commission at the meeting on January 13th. It's still technically pending at first reading at the commission. So if the Land Use Committee is supportive of this change, we will make that change and bring the ordinance back for a new first reading to the City Commission.
Ricky, can I ask a question? Are you okay for now?
You're the boss. Go ahead.
Okay. It's a team effort here. Tom, has the Ocean Drive panel and Zaskovich had the chance to weigh in and review this ordinance?
No. There was a separate parking ordinance that was part of the referral by the mayor in October, and it is identical to this, but this was part of a separate ordinance for the MXC area that began last year. So the other MXC ordinance on parking reductions, that's being reviewed by Zaskovich, and we can certainly take that to the Art Deco Cultural District panel. But this one was one that was traveling on its own outside of the overall strategy for the Ocean Drive MXC. If this ends up moving forward, then I think what would happen is that it would sort of usurp the one that is currently pending as part of the larger referral by the mayor, because they essentially do the same thing.
Yeah, I think it's a good conversation, colleagues. And I think I'd like to have that conversation with the benefit of the Ocean Drive panel, which I think, you know, was referred to a couple times during the last item, I also want to have that conversation as we think about what is this area really going to look like. For example, I might be a little more amenable to reductions in parking for residential development. So I guess I'm looking forward to hearing back from the panel on the overall vision and the parking. I'd prefer to do that before taking action here. Commissioner Gongora, you're next.
I agree with your comments. Actually, in my agenda review with Tom yesterday that I did, I mentioned the same thing, but I'm more excited about incentivizing residential uses than hotel uses. And if we are going to add a hotel component, I need to better understand what those components are and how they work. I'd also ask Tom to resend me the information so that I could refresh my recollection about what concerns me about this ordinance in the first place and why we bifurcated it. The reason that we bifurcated it at the commission meeting was the ordinances that previously stood would have exempted things such as CVSs and Walgreens and not required them to pay parking impact fees. And I think we all agreed that that would be bad. And they were actually the largest amount of money that we collected as a parking impact fee because we don't want to incentivize those uses. I looked through it last night, and the other business that paid a significant fee over the past few years was Aqua Hotel, almost 2 years. So I was trying to get the specifics from Tom as to what they did to try to kind of juggle in my mind whether I think it was a good thing that they paid, or maybe it would be a good thing for us to waive a fee for future types of hotel redevelopments like that. And I don't have that information today. So I like the idea of letting the committee weigh in on it and bring it back to us. Although I'm not one of the ones usually very supportive of reducing parking or parking impact fees, I'm open-minded to it, but I'd rather hear what the committee has to say first.
Okay, thank you for that. Commissioner Arreola, I think if I could underline what you probably just heard here a little, two of us would like this to travel together to the committee, which they're actively discussing parking. At least two of us, I think, have a little more open-mindedness about residential and bringing more residents back to that area, parking reductions. So I think that's sort of the direction we'd like to go. Are you amenable to that as a next step?
Yeah, so just a couple comments. Yeah, I'm amenable. You know, I think we're trying to whip grand visions for the MXC district, is we want to do this right and intelligently. So, you know, it's being reviewed, with some expert help, then great. No need to rush this. But, yeah, we do want to try to bring it home at some point. And to the extent that we can start sort of leaning in on which way we want to go. So you guys mentioned residential, which, you know, I think I could definitely be persuaded to go in that direction. Because I do think a big part of the problems we're seeing in the area are the flop houses, and I like that term, and I'm going to start using it because we got to call it for what it is. And some of these hotels are nothing but flop houses, and so to the extent that they can be fixed up and become nicer, classier hotels, great, or repositioned as residential, that could be great. One thing I want to address, though, if we're going to go in the direction of residential for some of these buildings are short-term rentals. So to the extent that these buildings would be grandfathered in and allowed to be short-term rentals, I don't want to just substitute one problem for another. So let's keep that in mind. If you turn a hotel into a residential building that all of a sudden becomes short-term rental, I don't think we fix the problem. The other thing, Tom, if you could, and I hate to put you on the spot, but quantify for us, right? So if you took a, 10 or 20 room hotel, what triggers the parking requirement? If they want to go in and say, look, I've owned this property for 30 years and it's kind of run down and, I want to invest several million dollars into it. What triggers the parking requirement? And then quantify what a, 20 room hotel would have to pay in terms of parking impact fees to do a renovation. How does it work?
So in the MXC district, Because it's a local historic district, there is no parking requirement for any structure that existed prior to October of 1993. And so that's the lion's share of the buildings in the MXC district because they're mostly older historic buildings. So if somebody comes in and wants to do a major renovation and change the number of units within the shell of the building, they would not have a parking requirement. However, if there's areas in the back of the property or there's nondescript portions of a building that they want to demolish and then build a new addition, any new construction would trigger a parking requirement. In virtually every instance, there's nowhere to provide the parking on site. There's no space for it. It's very difficult to access. So they end up having to pay an impact fee. When a lot of these hotels were renovated in the 90s, the impact fee was only $5,000 a space. It eventually went up in the late 90s to $10,000 a space. So from a performer standpoint, it was a lot easier to build that in. Now it's $40,000 a space. So if somebody wants to add, say, 20 new units at $40,000 a space, they're looking at an $800,000 parking impact fee in addition to everything else. And so that's why it's a very significant number. And then the other thing that's important to point out, and we've discussed this in the past and in both memos and verbally, is in the 90s, the parking impact fee subsidized the construction of a number of garages. We've got garages at 7th Street, 10th Street. We have a garage that was built in 1991 at 13th Street, two garages at 16th Street. And so prior to that, there really was a run on parking because there was nowhere to go. Now we do have a number of garages that have been built and also a lot of new development projects that are much bigger, like the new hotel that's going up on 6th Street. They've incorporated a very significant parking structure for their guests. And I suspect that at some point they're probably going to generate overflow parking as well. So I think that in terms of storage, we have seen the ability to absorb that storage, and the types of additions that this would be applicable to would probably be fairly minor.
So colleagues, this is why I proposed it, right? And thank you, Tom, for quantifying it. And I want us all to keep that in mind and for folks in the public to sort of understand the numbers and why we're examining this. To the extent that we have flop houses, part of it is, you know, our own creation through the legislation, right? And so property owners who've been sitting in these properties for 30-something years, they're between a rock and a hard place. Yeah, they'd like to upgrade their properties, but it's really expensive to do it, and so they decide not to do it, you know? So I think if we want to try to, reinvent the area using land use regulations like this, is one of the tools in our toolbox. And so I think we really should explore this. I'm strongly in favor of this waiver. And I hope that's where we end up.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Ariel. You made a number of points, which I too am supportive. Sounds like all of us underline think the residential is particularly attractive. I think it's coming clear that this parking fee is really an incentive. And so my final piece of input, because I believe by acclamation, unless there's an objection, we're going to bundle this with the discussion that the Ocean Drive panel is having, is if a hotel is to avail itself of this, how do we ensure that hotel is going to contribute in the most robust way to the new Ocean Drive, the new Art Deco Cultural District? So I'm just sort of saying something slightly in different language than Commissioner Ariel was said, though I think conceptually, you know, we're probably heading down the same path. This is an incentive. We're really discounting. So we deserve to have members of that community that are going to contribute to the community in a robust way. And I just think we have to be smart about that. I see residential do it. I'll look forward to hearing back from the committee in terms of how hotels could avail of themselves and if that would address some of the issues that Commissioner Ariola brought up as well. So with that, colleagues, I'm going to conclude item number two with the direction. Tom, do you have what you need?
Yeah, I guess the only question I would have is this, is it appears that by acclamation, the committee wants to send this to the Art Deco Cultural District Panel for their review and recommendation. The question is, do you want this to come back to land use after the panel has made their recommendation, or do you want us to take it back to the full city commission for the new first reading and then provide the recommendation of the Art Deco Cultural District Panel at that point?
My preference, and colleagues weigh in if you just try, I'd rather have it come back to land use. Let's get something that we can get on board, because I think there's enough meeting of the minds. We should get something. I think that stop will help. So unless there's objection, I would have it come back to land use.
Fine with me.
Okay.
If that's the case, then I would suggest that you continue it to your April meeting, so that we have enough time to get this to the Art Deco Cultural District Panel at their March meeting. And we'll try to make sure that we expedite that as quickly as possible.
Show it done. Item number three, commercial height limits for office use on Alton Road. The sponsors are Mayor Gelber and Commissioner Richardson. Tom, you're off to a great start here, so I'm gonna stick with you. I think this is your...
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'm going to share my screen. Because I want to show the public the visuals that we included with the packet. And PJ, does everything look good?
You just have to make it a full screen there.
Okay, let me go into full screen mode. Okay, so basically, just by way of introduction, as the committee may remember, on December 9th, at first reading, there was an ordinance that was presented that proposed height increases for office uses on Alton Road, as well as height increases for new commercial buildings on Terminal Island. On December 9th, the City Commission approved at first reading the proposal for Terminal Island, and that moved forward, but bifurcated the Alton Road portion and referred it back to the Land Use Committee. one of the things that the Land Use Committee asked for was some visuals that showed exactly what was being proposed in order to get a full understanding. And it was also suggested that some other options be brought forward regarding other potential heights. And so what we've done is we've modified the draft ordinance that is attached to be specific to Alton Road only. It's still pending at first reading before the commission. It's pending a recommendation from the Land Use Committee. And we created three different options that we explain in the memo. And I'm going to take you through these now visually. The first item is what is currently allowed under the ordinance. If you have a building on Alton Road in the CD2 district that has structured parking, you can go up to 60 feet in height. And what that basically allows for now, as you can see, is about a 20-foot clear first level. And that takes into account the future raising of the road and the sidewalk. You get a 10-foot interior level for a parking pedestal, for a parking level. And then the floor-to-ceiling heights of the office levels above are limited to roughly 11 feet. This is something that, from what we've seen, is not as conducive to Class A office space and even non-Class A office space due to the fact that the floor-to-ceiling heights are so low. PJ, the one thing I can't do in full screen is I can't seem to move to a different screenshot because I've got six visuals.
Try using your arrow keys on your keyboard, right or left.
There we go. Thank you, PJ. This next option right here would be an option that would raise the overall height 5 feet to 65 feet. And as you can see, the first two levels remain static, the ground floor retail, as well as the parking level. but it does allow for two of the floors to increase its floor to ceiling height to 13 feet and one floor to go to 12 feet. And this is a little bit better than 11 feet, but we're not sure that this would be the game changer that we would really need to incentivize office uses. The third option, which is what the administration is recommending, is a 75-foot height option. And as you can see, this provides a little bit more room at the first level for commercial and retail uses. But more importantly, with the same height for the parking level, it allows up to 15 feet floor to floor on the interior. This is something that's much more conducive for office spaces and office uses, and we believe provides the most flexibility. We also have provided some massing options for comparison. We picked a lot that was sort of in between. We didn't use an entire block, even though somebody could potentially aggregate all the properties with an entire block. And we also didn't want to do a much smaller lot, a single lot of say 50 feet. So this is the site where the Bank America is currently located. And this is not to suggest that it's for sale or that Bank America is leaving. We're just using this for study purposes only. And from a perspective standpoint, this is what a building would look like at the currently allowed 60 feet. Next would be the 65-foot option. And as you can see, the difference is almost imperceptible because it's only 5 feet. When you go to the 75-foot option, it is a little bit taller, but again, within the overall context of Alton Road, we don't believe that it presents a major or has a major negative impact. So this is these are basically all the options that we have. And I'm gonna go ahead and stop sharing. And so we're recommending that the 15-foot option, the 15-foot increase, which would be a maximum of 75 feet for office uses only, be sent back to the City Commission with a recommendation of approval by the Land Use Committee. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that, Tom. Let's see. Commissioner Arriola, your hand is up. I don't know if that's, I think you go first, unless that's a hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just put up. So yeah, I'm strongly in favor of this legislation proposed by the mayor and Commissioner Richardson. And those visual illustrations, Tom, were very helpful. So thank you. I mean, I was already persuaded before, but now I'm very persuaded. I think, folks, if we're serious about trying to diversify and strengthen our community and, quite frankly, increase the quality of life of our residents who are tired of driving across the bay to work and having to go by vertical traffic, and, you know, we want to try to promote live, work, and play all in Miami Beach, this is the way to go. Try to create some additional office space. You know, going from 60 to 75 feet is not the end of the world, but it may actually make a big difference in the creation of office space and local jobs and convenience for our residents. So I think it's, for me, a no-brainer, I'm supportive.
Thank you, Commissioner Arriola. I see at least one hand from the public, so I don't see my colleagues' hands yet. So let's go to Gail Durham from the public. Gail, you're...
Oh, hi there. My name is Gail Durham. I live on West Ave, and I would be negatively impacted by this height increase, which I strongly oppose for these reasons. 929 Alton is a brand new building. It's going to be finished in about a month or two. It's 60 feet high as of right, as the law allows it, and it's a Class A office space. So here's somebody who built at 60 feet by law a Class A office space. So you can do it, and that's the way I feel we should follow that rule. Second of all, Thomas Mooney just showed us some renderings where the first floor was 23 feet. Why 23 feet? The law on Alton Road is 50 feet, and then you can go an extra 10 feet if you build the ground floor at 18 feet. But he put all his renderings at 23 feet, so that just makes the building even higher. And third of all, we just had I guess a test run with Terminal Island. They just got an increase to 75 feet to build an office space. But what got really approved, the final rendering, was 110 feet. So 75 feet is not 75 feet, okay? 75 feet now gets up to 110 feet. They've got this 10,000 square foot mechanical room, and they've got this 10,000 square foot roof on top of a roof because they put a restaurant up there that allows 300 people to drink alcohol till 3 a.m. And I fear this is what Alton Road is really, what we're trying to make here, is like another entertainment district. I mean, if you're going to allow offices, don't allow them to also have 300 people on the roof. It's right next to my neighborhood, a residential neighborhood, and we don't want that. I'm done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gail. Tom, could you address a couple specifics there? One, could, you mentioned it, but if you just go over that 23 foot in the first, you know, the first level that Gail referenced. And the second thing she raised, besides the rooftop entertainment, which frankly I'm going to come back to, is 75 feet really 75 feet? What is the net when you add the roof and stuff? What are we actually talking?
Sure. First, on the ground floor, on the 75 foot option, what we did was we showed a distribution of the volume with 15 foot ceiling heights at the upper levels. And that allowed for a little bit of additional height to be used at the first level if somebody wanted to avail themselves of that. In order for overall building height in commercial areas to be measured from BFE plus maximum freeboard, developers are required to provide a minimum clearance height of at least 12 feet at the time in the future that the sidewalk and road is anticipated to be raised. And so we build in that extra height volumetrically to allow for the future raising of those floors to meet or exceed what the raised height of the street or sidewalk is eventually likely to be. Some developers may choose to go with a slightly lower floor to ceiling height on the interior. So they may decide we would rather have 16 foot floor to floor on the upper levels, which would bring their first floor down to 20 feet clearance. Some may decide we don't need 23 feet. We're going to be good with 20. And the building would only be 72 feet if they went with 15 foot floor to floor. So what we wanted to show is what the maximum would possibly be at 75 feet, but it may actually be lower if a developer decides to go, say, with 14 foot clear on the interior floors and only 20 feet at the first level. They may not need to avail themselves of the full 75 feet. With regard to the rooftop exceptions, under the code, there are certain elements that are allowed to be rooftop exceptions. These include things like rooftop mechanical equipment. This would be generators, cooling towers, things of that nature. You can also have open lattice work that would provide coverage on a rooftop, but that has to be trellis work or pergolas or things that are at least 50% open. Other rooftop elements that are permitted as an exception are elevator bulkheads, stairwells. For life safety purposes, you need at least two means of egress. For accessibility purposes, you have to have at least one elevator that goes up to the roof. Those are the main types of height exceptions that are permitted. It's also important to point out that within this area of Alton Road, the only type of rooftop use that is permitted currently are rooftop restaurants. And so that already is a permitted use along Alton Road. Rooftop entertainment is strictly prohibited in that area, as are our rooftop bars.
Thank you for that, Tom. I see one hand, Wayne Jones. Wayne?
Yes, sir.
Wayne, I believe your hand was raised. We're talking Alton Road height. We always love to hear from you. Are you weighing in on that item?
No, sir. I don't have the expertise for that. It was just accidental. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. No. With, We always love to hear from you. You can weigh in on any item you want, but I'll take it back. All right, thanks. So, colleagues, let me offer a couple of thoughts here. And I think Gail raised some important points, as did Commissioner Arriola. Directionally, I am supportive of this idea and concept. I think there is a place for additional Class A office. And I think it's important that we recognize that while we have some modern buildings in place, we have some buildings that are going to go through their natural evolution. And frankly, I think of offices as a less intensive use than others, for example, like hotels. For example, when we had height increases between 17th and Dade on Alton, we end up with hotels. So for me, I see the benefits of office with proper resident protection being the fact that they can be less intensive. They can, as Commissioner Arriola, provide the opportunity for work, live, work, play. And so if there were the right protections, then I would be comfortable. So let me be specific then about a few things that are on my mind here. The first is within the building itself, with the exception of the first floor, which we might want to activate in a different way, if it's for office, I would like to see office. So Tom, would 100% of the not first floor have to be office under the current ordinance?
The way that the ordinance is drafted, and I don't want to misspeak without, developments that consist solely of office uses above the ground level of the structure. So it doesn't mandate that it has to be non-office, but in our experience, it's probably not likely that somebody would want to locate office uses at the first level of a building fronting a major commercial corridor. We could certainly place some language in there that would require non-office uses. We're doing that for the Sunset Harbor overlay that'll be coming to the planning board next month. So we can certainly include language like that to mandate that it be non-office commercial uses to activate the sidewalk.
Yeah, that I would like that. So I'd like to see something that activates it for the community on the ground floor. And I'd like to see by covenant that the rest of the building is going to be office. So that would be my first thing. If we're talking about office, it's got to be an office. The other thing I'd like to have built in is generous setbacks. I'd like us to look at what our current setbacks are and how this height increase might impact the massing. And I'd like to have setbacks in place. The third thing I'm going to put on the table that would be important to my ultimate support for this would be timing. Here's the miss. The miss is that we give this as an incentive and then nothing happens. And then, you know, a couple of years later, folks come in and say, well, 65 wasn't enough for 75. You know, we really need 85. And so whether it is a one-year sunset, whether it is a one-year, Tom, I know you tend to prefer the look-backs, but I'd like to see actual things happen and not have a different body come back and say, well, we'll just add, now that the height is 65, we can add more. I think we need to address this issue of the roofs. We're not trying to become an entertainment area. We're trying to build, allow offices. So I think it's important that there not be, you know, things that could disturb the neighborhood. And I think from a twofold, one, I think we need to explore with these restaurants what could and could not be allowed. And two, that any mechanical equipment would have sufficient sound protections. Let me state for the record that there have been complaints on West Avenue from some recent businesses as it relates to noise. So ground floor activation, all office by covenant for the rest, timing, protecting the roofs, generate setbacks. With that, if we protect the neighborhood, and I think Sunset Harbor, the way we've worked that and engaged the community, I do support the concept. I think it's in the best interest of the long-term community overall, but we've got to do it right is sort of my position. Okay, let's see. Commissioner Arriola, I don't know if that's a handoff.
No, it's a fresh hand, Chair.
Oh, it's a fresh hand. Hey, so, you come back anytime. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, so actually, I agree with you, Mark. I like the way you summarized. I think the only point where, and I think you just threw out a number, but just the sunset look back, whatever you want to call it, you know, you said 1 year. I don't think you actually meant 1 year. I'd want it to be longer just because, you know, these projects do take time to develop and go through the approval process. But, you know, setbacks, protection on, you know, how high some of these mechanicals can go on the rooftop. And then, you know, I want office, you know, this is about incentivizing offices, not more hotels. And, you know, if we're going to build offices, we don't want them masquerading as office space really to create rooftop restaurants. So I would be comfortable with restrictions on that as well.
Good. Thank you, Commissioner Arriola. And you're correct. My 1 year was a straw man to illustrate a point. I absolutely would look for the administration's recommendation. But it sounds like you and I are quite well aligned on the need for protection with the community while doing something we think could be good for the overall community as well as provide this office space. Commissioner Gongora.
And by the way, I'll agree with you on the ground floor activation retail. You know, a couple comments. You know, I've mentioned in the past, you know, I'm not a big fan of banks at the ground level because they don't activate the ground floor. But we can cross that bridge when it comes. But, you know, we see examples now currently on Alton Road, some of these newer projects off of Lincoln Road that got banks as first floor tenants, and it's just dead. One of them already is closed. You know, you look at what Trader Joe's did for the neighborhood, you know, and the predictions that it was going to be a traffic nightmare never came to fruition. But, you know, it's an office building with a really great ground floor tenant, it's a really great amenity for the neighborhood and the quality of life of our residents. So, you know, I hope we all get behind this because I think it will really improve things for us.
Thank you, Commissioner Arriola. Let's hear from Commissioner Gongora.
Yeah, this was an excellent discussion. I think that you framed the issues very well, Commissioner Samuelin. I think we're all supportive of exploring incentivizing office uses. It's very encouraging reading the number of billionaires and multimillionaires buying residential homes in our community and reading articles about what's happening over in the city of Miami, where some of the larger tech companies are looking to relocate offices. I don't think we'll be able to compete with the city of Miami on that level because we're not looking at going as high as they do in downtown Miami and the adjoining corridors. But I think we could craft something reasonable that helps incentivize office uses with protections for the neighbors and residents that live nearby. And as you stated, I'll emphasize again, my big concern is the rooftops and the activation of the rooftops and creating a nuisance for the abutting residential neighborhood. So I would want to look at some strong protections in that regard. I'm also curious, the boundaries are defined in the body of the draft ordinance of the change to 142-306. But I asked Tom, and I haven't really seen an answer, is how many potential buildings could upzone under this ordinance? Because it concerns me if it's 100 buildings that could potentially go under construction at one time to create this additional height and office use. So I'd like to have a better idea of what I'm looking at and maybe take more bite-sized and concentrated and focused look at the area where we should be incentivizing the specific office uses. Right now, we looked at it at Terminal Island where you could build one, and we looked at it on one block of Sunset Harbor where you could build two. But now we're looking at a major corridor Do we have any idea, Tom, how many potential buildings are there that would be impacted by this ordinance?
The ordinance would apply to the west side of Alton Road from roughly 8th Street to about 11th Street. And then at 11th Street, it becomes CD1 up until 14th Street. And then from 14th Street all the way to roughly 16th Street, because north of 16th Street on the west side of Alton Road, basically everything has been developed. So within that area, you could potentially have the entire side of the block aggregated and fully developed as office. So it's tough to extrapolate the total number of eligible properties because we don't know how many properties will be aggregated into a single block or how many properties would be aggregated into multiple lots within a single unified development site. We could certainly provide you with the number of existing commercial lots on the west side of Alton Road, but that may not present an accurate picture of the total number of projects because it's not likely that somebody's going to go to 75 feet on a 50-foot lot. They would probably aggregate multiple properties to make it worthwhile. How big the lot aggregations would be in unified development sites, it's really hard to say. We could certainly give you an outside number, but it could potentially exceed that depending upon the lot aggregations.
I'd like to have a better idea in that regard. Just because, you know, a lot of buildings could try to take advantage of this if it passes. And we could have a major traffic flow and construction problem on Alton Road. You know, not that that's a terrible thing, because sometimes you have to go through growing pains when it comes to progress. But I think it would be better to get ahead of that issue, because if we're creating a major traffic jam for the city on one of our main arterial roads through this legislation, I think we should be aware of that on the front end.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. I'm going to pick up on a couple things you said. Rooftops, rooftops, rooftops. You know, we have this, I echo what you said. Gail Durham mentioned it. We've got to have proper protection. I too would like to understand the magnitude of the change and the neighborhood impact and whether any phasing might be warranted. You know, we started in Sunset Harbor, it was going to be the entire neighborhood. And then, you know, after engaging with the neighborhood, we ended up with the one block. So I do think it's important that we think through that neighborhood impact. As Commissioner Gongora said, I feel like, and I would encourage that our resident community to engage with us, as Sunset Harbor did, to find what the win-win is. I want to raise one other new topic, just at least a point of information, to Tom. Tom, what are the parking requirements that are in place? I want to make sure that if we're going to have some of the traffic issues, Commissioner Gongora said, will there be sufficient parking?
So right now for offices, because this area of Alton Road is not located in a historic district, they would have to provide the required parking on site. And so whether they develop an office project under the current code or whether they develop with an increase in height, the parking requirements remain the same. It's one per 300, and they would have to provide that parking on site. And so clearly, if you start to see a lot of development along Alton Road, whether it's office, whether it's residential, whatever the use may be, you're going to have, at least until we get a more robust mass transit set of options, you're going to see likely more congestion. But they are required to provide the parking within their site. They don't have the ability to impact fee off parking for new construction under the code currently.
Great. Thank you for that. So, colleagues, I think we've had a great discussion. I'm going to summarize it as that the Land Use Committee directionally is supportive of this height increase for offices, done right and done in a way that is sensitive and hopefully positive to the community. For example, you know, those good ground floor activations for retail of things that the community really likes. So I think we've thrown a lot at the administration. I would like to suggest that they digest what we talked about, take everything into account. We'll probably have the same hit list when it comes back. So would love the administration to bake that thing and bring it back to our next meeting. That would be my recommendation of the next step. Does it any objection to that? Is that all okay with everyone? Going once,
sounds
going
good.
Twice. Yeah. Tom, are you okay with all that? Do you need anything you need us to weigh in?
No, by acclamation, you're going to continue this to March 2021. We'll get the information Commissioner Gongora asked for. And we'll incorporate the suggestions that you made, Commissioner Samuelin, and Commissioner Arriola made. We'll incorporate those into a revised draft and bring that back to you at your March meeting.
Wonderful. Okay, colleagues, we're on a roll. Amy Knowles is going to be helping us in item four. I just want to make sure that Amy is with us. Amy, are you with us? Because otherwise we're going to – I think I see Amy out there. I'm going to tee it up. Or Elizabeth, your hand is raised. So let me say a word about this. It sounds like we have the folks to help us through. This was a resolution by the City Commission to develop a resiliency vision. You know, sometimes we get questions from people about what are we going to look like when this is all done? Where's the positive narrative that we have for our future, because there absolutely is one. Good news is that we have FIU on board, and they want to work with us. And so the next step was for the city administration to come back with a couple specifics in terms of next steps. So with that, Amy, let's see. I see lots of hands. I mentioned you because you've been working on it. Who from the administration would like to kick us off?
Hi, good morning, Commissioner.
Okay.
And Commission. And I'd also request that PJ bring up Professor John Stewart from FIU, because he's going to share a short presentation as well. So for the item before you, as you said, Commissioner, I will be providing a few options for the next steps with the goal of a motion for moving the full item to City Commission. The original resolution was passed on consent in March, and the item was discussed here at committee in July. So since then, we have continued to move forward in developing an MOU for a global resilience campaign with Florida International University using the proposal shared for you in July. So I have worked with communications and with environmental on that. It has become very clear, while the intent is very admirable and very bold, this is a huge lift in terms of time and resources by the city and FIU in terms of participation and oversight. And essentially, this would be a Miami Beach project. So for the next steps, we're recommending that we continue to collaborate with FIU through courses, working with students on inspirational visions and renderings, and also other resilience-related projects, but at a manageable level that can be achieved with current staffing, with our communications team and environmental. So some of the next steps over time could include some additional options or phases. One, we could take these renderings and others that we already have, for example, from the Harvard study, from Buoyant City, and hold some type of virtual community engagement meeting focusing on this tremendous body of work, and also sharing these through digital media platforms. Another could be a multi-day charrette made up of local and global experts with a very specific goal of visioning for different parts of the city with specific goals. And then third is that ambitious global resilience campaign for essentially a competition for professionals that was presented by FIU in July. So I want to underscore there's no doubt there's a tremendous importance for inspirational images on what the city is going to look like in the next 30 to 50 years, you know, given 2 to 3 feet of sea level rise and the innovations we will see. So reimagining this is very important. More the question is, what is the type of campaign that's best suited for this time? We had an opportunity this fall to test out the resilience vision concept through a fall graduate level course led by Professor John Stewart. The students actually produced exciting and interesting images that we wanted to share with you, specifically for buildings in the Flamingo Historic District. And they were given very specific guidance to use sea level rise projections to showcase ways the buildings can be preserved, including green, blue, and gray infrastructure, and also technological innovations and sustainability. So with that, if Professor John Stewart is here, I'd love for him.
Excuse me, Amy, if I may. Thank you for that. That was very helpful. And thank you to John for coming and all the work with FAU. I just want to focus us a little bit because you gave us some good food for thought. And I want to be precise as the item sponsor, what I think is a logical path forward. And that is, again, adopting our crawl, walk, run approach here. What we're really trying to do is a process that continues to inspire our community and engage our community and starts to develop this positive narrative, including what we're doing with FIU. So my specific recommendation is that we continue the coursework that FIU, that we've been doing. So I look forward to seeing what John's going to show us. But colleagues, I want you to know that the part of the request here is that we keep doing that. So that's point one. And second, that we conduct the workshop you alluded to, where we present the various scenarios, the buoyant cities work, the Harvard, present those with the intent to give our community the opportunity to give feedback, ask questions about those, and provide their ideas. And that we do that with FIU, that we create an MOU that gets us through the workshop and identifies potential next steps. In other words, the MOU really is about getting that workshop done, but also allows for the other things you said, Amy, in terms of the opportunity to do the charrettes, the campaign. And I think that workshop could in and of itself deliver on getting some FIU thinking, getting some of this positive communications that we want, and pushing the thinking while engaging our committee. So colleagues, just as you see this, it's a two-part step. Keep the course, do the workshop. With that, John, thank you for what you and FIU are doing. You can build on anything I said. Let's see some images.
Great. I'll share my screen. Let me just up to you. So thank you all very much for inviting me here. And commissioners, it's nice to see you. And, as part of the Art Deco committee, it's also been a very interesting morning of conversation. So I appreciate all of the work that you guys do. So we undertook this project in the fall with 17 architecture students. We looked at this portion of the Meridian Avenue. We were really trying to get the students to think about Miami Beach as neighborhoods, and each neighborhood has their own kind of character. The students chose the buildings that they were interested in looking at. As Amy mentioned, they spoke to sea level scientists, they spoke to City, to Elizabeth, to Amy, to Tanja, to Tanya, to others in the city, and they looked very closely at the buoyant city. So they kind of test drove the buoyant city, and during the semester of their work, they were that was when you all kind of adopted the buoyant city as a guidance for what to do. So the students were really looking at how to create in scenarios that would point to policy, would point to possibilities for the future. And so they were looking at 2070. And so they were looking at things like, in this case, the possibility of pocket parks with green infrastructure, the possibility of looking, of having historic buildings there and the raised streets. They assumed, for example, that the streets had been raised, that this was 2070 and the streets had been raised, I think, 40, 48 inches. They were looking at transportation options. This is just one of them, but also showing kind of the way the streets are kind of are modified with the overhead transportation, all just ideas. And I think Commissioner Samuelin really said it very well when he was talking about these being
the starting point, the provocative starting points for conversations about how policy can lead us towards an inspirational understanding of the future of Miami Beach. Looking at how streets are used, how the areas between streets and buildings, the green areas, can be used for community sites. I want to say the students studied these buildings using Ancestry.com and Newspaper.com. They were studying the languages that the owners and that the building owners spoke to the architects in. They were looking at the families that lived in the buildings from the beginning, trying to build a future that's based upon a past that has the most positive aspects of the past in Miami Beach. In this case, the student was looking at other kinds of technologies, to understand kind of the ecology and how science and understanding how Miami Beach is using the science, environmental science is so important here. In this case, a student took a drone, literally he brought his drone over the site, over his site, and then kind of talked about the way in which technology can help us to understand the city. In this case, it's 1600 Meridian Avenue, a proposal for a small, which is an interesting building. It had, when it was built in 1940, it had hotel rooms embedded in it, and he proposed to place a small hotel on top of the building. So looking at land use, looking at building use, as well as sustainability. And this student proposed a dramatic, you know, a track along Meridian Avenue, bicycles. So also the idea that we would get our information from screens and other types of devices. Another way in which we might understand the history, again, using technological overlays and how the city could be kind of an adventure, a site for adventure related to its history and to its environment and the innovations. And then the second to last image I'll show is this one of these residential buildings was changed, was modified to be a school or research center. The center courtyard you can see here has been made into a mangrove area, and students are studying biology. It's a biological and environmental science center. And then this is that same building from the outside. You might know it on the southeast corner of Meridian and 16th Street. And just talking about how the streets themselves can become places for, you know, safe places for people to kind of take to benefit from these green and blue infrastructures that support this new vision. So that's all I had to share, and I'll stop sharing now.
Thank you, John, and congratulations to you and the students for the outstanding work. This is exactly the type of inspirational messaging we want, and it's fabulous to see the next generation that we'll be bringing forward. Question for you, on a go-forward basis, if it's the will of the body and the commission to continue to engage, will this be an ongoing course that you will have? How will the student, will you do this periodically? What are you recommending? Or
I teach this course I've been focusing, because my office is on Miami Beach, and I've been focusing on, and I live in Miami Beach, I've been focusing on this, the historic districts for the past several years, and I teach this course every fall. So I'd be able, starting in August, I'd be able to do another version of it, this course, and in another area, obviously working very closely with Amy and her team to kind of understand. And in this case, I worked with Debbie Tackett as well. She was really instrumental in helping us get data from the buildings and also to focus our attention on a specific area. So I'm open to any of these conversations and to inviting the public in, because I think that's a wonderful idea.
Great. Thank you, John. Let me see if we have any questions or comments. Seeing none, let me just repeat and sort of reiterate. I really can't technically make the motion, but what I think we should do is keep doing what we're doing here with Professor Stewart and his excellent work, because I think that's helpful. The second thing I should think is we should hold this workshop where we bring the various visions that we have. We're not looking for one crystal vision. We're looking for a process. We're looking for positive message. We're looking for inspiration. We're looking to highlight the partnership with FIU. Let's get that workshop to happen with some proper messaging around that. And let's get an MOU so that we can get us through the workshop and then see where that leads us, but also highlight what the path forward might be. We're on a journey. This is a marathon, not a sprint. So that's sort of the next steps. I think these are high impact, low resource sort of actions to keep the ball moving. Let me look at my colleagues here. Any objections? Commissioner Gongora, Commissioner Arreola, anything you want to say? Does that seem like a reasonable path forward?
No, yeah. I think that you framed it well, and I support your suggestion.
Okay, and Ricky, I'm sorry, I heard both of you a little bit. You okay with all that?
Yep, support the director.
Okay. Amy, do you have what you need at this point?
I do, Commissioner. I do want to clarify, when you say workshop, you mean more of a public engagement type workshop and not a full city commission workshop, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. Right. Thank you for the clarification. A virtual workshop, roll up our sleeves with FIU, share what we're doing, get feedback, see what questions are on folks' mind. Absolutely.
I just wanted to thank John. I meant to do that in my comments. Thank you, John, for your presentation, and nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. Thank you.
And I want to thank John as well. He's been a pleasure to work with, and we had just a blast meeting with his students and talking to them and talking about Miami Beach and their visions for the future. So it brought so much great energy. I do want to clarify also for the MOU, Chair, we would need to bring that to the City Commission for approval, just as standard procedure. So we would plan on doing that likely in April.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you for all your work on this, Amy.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Okay. All right. We're moving on. Item number 6. Limitations on big box stores. Commissioner Arreola, do you want to tee this up or would you like to hear from Tom?
Colleagues, I think the title itself is self-explanatory. I know all of us have talked about this. I think all of us are, I'm going to guess, we're all like-minded on seeing some reasonable restrictions on big box stores further coming into Lincoln Road. The issue is going to be the devil's in the details. You know, what defines a big box, how big, distance separation, all of those kinds of things. And Tom has worked hard on this together with the Lincoln Road bid. I imagine someone from Lincoln Road bid is going to talk on this. But I, for one, very sort of saddened by what's happened on Lincoln Road over the last 20 years. I mean, 20 years ago, Lincoln Road was in its true glory when it was full of mom and pop retailers and restaurants, a lot of them locally owned. It's what made it successful. What made it such a popular tourist destination. And then it became a victim of its own success. And a lot of those businesses got pushed out in favor of, big mass market retailers, and Lincoln Road lost its flavor. And what happened is what we see today, which I think last I checked somewhere around 30% vacancy. We're about to embark on a $55 million renovation of the street. And so I think it is within our purview to weigh in on what we want to see or not see on Lincoln Road. So I think with that, I'll turn it over to Tom and he can talk to us about his opinion on it.
Sure. At the last land use committee meeting, we discussed a lot of the items that Commissioner Arreola just raised. And the direction of the committee was to come back to you with a draft ordinance that took a look at two things. One, potential limitations on size, and two, a potential expansion of uses that aren't permitted now that would be applicable to larger structures and larger venues. What we did was we did an analysis of the larger existing establishments on Lincoln Road, and this is in the memo. And they range from 29,000 square feet, the Gap. Nike is 31,000 square feet. Forever 21 is approximately 41,000 square feet. And H&M is a little under 38,000 square feet. So what we're doing is we're proposing that the ordinance limit retail establishments to no more than 45,000 square feet. Now, since these establishments that are over this number are typically on lots that are over 50,000 square feet, we're also proposing alternative uses that could be located above the ground floor on these types of lots. And And these types of main permitted uses would include artisanal retail for on-site sales only, production studios, furniture sales establishments that are over 45,000 square feet, and major cultural institutions. We're also suggesting that as a conditional use, that artisanal retail with off-site sales be permitted, and neighborhood fulfillment centers with the cap of one establishment on Lincoln Road also be a conditional use. So while there might be a limitation on overall size, it would not affect, one, existing structures, but two, and more importantly, we just haven't seen retail structures go above that number. More importantly, it would create a broader array of uses for existing buildings that may have this larger size, like, for instance, the Regal Cinema. We don't know what's going to happen with that in terms of its adaptive reuse, but we think it would be a good idea to have some structure in place that would incentivize and plan for eventual types of use for that. The ordinance that is attached includes all of this. We believe it's ready to be sent to the commission for a referral to the planning board if there is consensus at the land use committee. The Lincoln Road bid is scheduled to discuss this item at their executive committee meeting tomorrow. One of my staff members will be able to attend that meeting. So if you'd rather hear from the bid again, we could always discuss this and continue this to the March meeting. If you believe it's ready to go forward to the commission for referral to the planning board, you could certainly do that as well. Since this is an LDR amendment, assuming the commission referred it to the planning board, it would require planning board review as well as then two readings before the commission. I'm available for any questions or if you wanted to take public input before we got into questions and answers. I think you're muted, Commissioner Samulin.
Ah, thank you, Tom. No one yet from the public. Let me see for my call. Commissioner Ariola, I don't know if that's a new hand or a leftover hand.
It's a new hand. So, Tom, okay. Right now the proposed legislation is at 45,000 square feet, and you gave us examples of some big box retailers that are on Lincoln Road, all below that 45,000 square feet. So I'm wondering whether that's too high a target and we should bring it down some. And then there are, Tom, is there a mechanism here for a waiver? So if an applicant came, let's say we lowered it to 30,000, could an applicant come and ask for a waiver so that we could say, oh, well, this is a really great, unique concept that'll be great for Lincoln Road, and by, you know, a majority, supermajority vote, allow an increase?
We did not include a waiver provision in here. We did not put a no variance provision. So there would not be a prohibition on somebody seeking a variance for a larger use. Whether we could entrust that waiver with a commission, I'd have to defer to Nick on that to see whether or not that's something that we'd be able to write into this or whether or not we need to study that a little bit further.
Thank you, Tom. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yes, right. Let me just frame it a little bit before you answer that, Nick. Colleagues, I think, and don't let me put words in your mouth, I think all of us have some appetite to limit big box. I also don't want to make a mistake where there's a great concept that will be good for Lincoln Road and the other businesses that are on Lincoln Road. I'd like to maybe allow us to have some kind of mechanism to say, okay, we could grant a variance to allow for something bigger than what people would have as a right to build there. So Nick, is that doable?
My thinking, Commissioner, is that the commission right now doesn't have any authority to approve individual uses. That authority rests with the planning board. So it might be, maybe the approach here is to give the planning board authority as either through the conditional use process or I don't know, maybe Tom, maybe we could think of a mechanism, but we would want to create objective standards that would apply equally to development, so that whatever board it is applying objective criteria in reviewing a use.
Okay. Colleagues, how do you feel about this?
I'll weigh in, Commissioner Arroyo. I'm supportive of the direction. I do think we need to have these constraints in place. I also hear your point about, you know, some degree of flexibility as well. But directionally, I am supportive of what's on the table. Commissioner Gongora, you're next.
Yeah, no, I've been supportive of this one. I think it's a good step. I know that Commissioner Arriola, I worked and co-sponsored with you the ordinance to stop the Walgreens from coming to Lincoln Road, which I think was a really good ordinance. And this is a further extension, similar to what we've seen in Sunset Harbor and other areas. The use prohibitions for me are a no-brainer. I think having a size limitation is also good. I'm okay with the 45,000 square feet being suggested to start. I'm okay with, I guess, leaving open the possibility of a hardship variance if something fantastic were to come along. It's your ordinance, but if you want to move it, I'm prepared to second it and move it along.
Yeah, I don't see anybody from the public, Chair. So if you want to make a motion, I'll second it.
Okay, I move the item.
Okay. And so no objections. I think we can show it done by acclamation. Tom, you have what you need here?
Yeah, just one point of clarification. So the motion would be to move this to the City Commission for referral to the Planning Board. And Commissioner Arriola, I think the only modification you're looking for is you want us to tweak the threshold size from 45,000 to a lower number, and then to explore options for a waiver provision, correct?
Yes, except Commissioner Gora had made the motion. I think he said he was fine with 45. Commissioner, can I persuade you to move it down so long as we have a variance clause?
I think that's fine, but rather than us come up with the number, why don't we see 45,000 or less and let the Planning Board weigh in and tell us what they think is the appropriate size?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so we'll move it forward with the $45,000 square feet, ask the Planning Board to provide a recommendation, and then we will explore some waiver provisions, and we'll include that in the draft ordinance that will come before you for referral to the Planning Board.
And Tom, it may be helpful if you and I meet with the sponsor on this, on the sure. waiver, because I think I'd like to further refine that with the sponsor.
Okay. We're good.
Let's see. Very good. Let's move to the last item, which was the addendum item. Item number 10, discussion regarding an alternative harmonization plan for West Avenue. I see a couple hands. We have Roy Coley, Michael Larkin, but Commissioner Gongora, you're the sponsor. Did you want to tee it up, or you want to hear from the other parties first?
I'll cue it up briefly. Thank you for putting this back on. I think we're all in agreement that the alternative harmonization plan for 959 West is good and acceptable. The kind of lingering issue in this item is tying it to the opening of the Bay Walk or not. And I would like to hear from the administration, and of course, I'm sure whoever else wants to, about if they've had the opportunity to go down there as I have, because it would create a path to nowhere. It's kind of a dead end. And I'm not sure it's great to keep that opening tied to the harmonization plan. I would like us also to consider what we can recommend from this committee to expedite and accelerate the opening of the Bay Walk at either the South Bay Club next door to the south or at the Mirador to the north to the right, and tie the opening to one of those so that we're actually opening a path of Bay Walk that people can walk on and enjoy. So with that said, I'll turn it over to whoever would like to speak from administration and from the public. Let me ask before the public speaks, I guess. Roy, did you have an opportunity to go down there, and or David? Does this connect to anything, or is it, as I said, has it changed? You just kind of go down 10th Street, and if it were to open, you'd be able to walk behind this one building, and that would be it. It's like a dead end to nowhere.
Roy has got his hand raised. I don't know if we can promote Roy. There we go.
I believe he just was.
Wonderful.
Okay. Can you hear me now, Commissioner?
Yes, we can, Roy.
Okay. Please. Sorry it took him a minute to move me into the meeting. Yes, to Commissioner Gongora's question, I did have the opportunity to join the applicant from the Southgate Properties, their representative, as well as David Martinez's team from CIP. We all met there, and we saw what their issue was. Essentially what their issue was at the time, that at 10th Street, where you have access to the bay walk behind their property, there's a gate that is operable that could be opened, and then pedestrians would then travel in a southerly direction, and when they reached the southern boundary of the Southgate property, there's nowhere for people to go. There's no outlet back to West Avenue, and the property to their southern border has not completed the bay walk, so it creates a bit of a stopping point, and that was what the applicant was opposed to, was having folks just go there and stop. And so that is the condition that's there.
And let me ask Roy or David, whichever of you can take this question. What can we, because I do want the Baywalk to be open, and I don't want my discussion on this item to be perceived as otherwise. I just don't necessarily want to open a something that leads nowhere. What could we do to accelerate the opening of either the South Bay Club or the Mirador's Baywalk? Is there anything the city can do to expedite those, and then tie this one building to one of those buildings so that we try to open a strip faster rather than just the area behind one building?
Commissioner, I can address the South Bay Club. The design and construction and permitting of the South Bay Club Baywalk is part of one of the GOB projects that's in either tranche 2 or 3. I know that there's discussions at the GOB Oversight Committee level. In fact, I think that may come up tonight, where the GOB group is going to present a new plan to move up some projects, that this might be one of them, that eventually the city commission would have to ratify and agree to. So because right now we don't have any way of moving forward with the permitting and design of that particular Baywalk. Once that money is forwarded through the tranches, then CIP can begin the permitting process. But even at the end of the day, even if we started tomorrow, we're still a good, several years away from a final product, just because permitting takes so long, and then you have to, go through that process.
Okay. So we could expedite it. Ultimately, the commission could expedite the Baywalk work behind the South Bay Club, tie the opening behind this building to that, and open them both together. I understand it would take a while for the permitting, but that's one act we could take to open them both up at the same time a little quicker. Is that correct?
From my perspective, yes. Obviously, once that southern piece is constructed, then they would be connected.
Okay. All right, thank you. Let's hear from the public.
Sure. So, Mr. Chairman, committee members, Michael Larkin here, representing the applicant. Along with me today is J.J. Wood, our architect, Skip Nash and Ian Gonzalez from Property Management, and my partner, Matthew Amster. Just to refresh your recollection with regard to why we're here and why we're proposing, as you all know, West Avenue will be raised. And in our particular section for the Shops West Avenue, The city had proposed a sheer retaining wall with a guardrail on top of it. It's a very unattractive condition aesthetically, and then it would cause great harm to the applicant because it'd be much harder to lease out these commercial spaces when you have that type of condition facing these tenants. So what we had proposed was an alternative harmonization plan. Last month, all of you expressed a degree of support for our proposed plan. It's aesthetically pleasing. It's on a gentle landscape, sloping berm. It looks much better than a sheer retaining wall. What we need from you all today would be a motion accepting this alternative harmonization plan and forwarding it on to the city commission. With regard to the Baywalk, you know, we don't think it's fair that an earlier opening of the Baywalk should be tied to the acceptance of this alternative harmonization plan. The Baywalk is connected to an entirely separate property, and its opening is governed by a DRB approval. You had asked your staff to explore what could be done to expedite the construction of this segment behind the South Bay Club, and as you just heard from David, they've done that, and it can be expedited. We also did a site visit to the Baywalk with Roy and David, and they recognized and saw for themselves that the Baywalk does dead end now. If there's an earlier opening of the Baywalk, people will just simply walk down from 10th Street and just congregate there, up to no good, out of sight. This earlier opening of the Baywalk would only exacerbate the criminal activity that occurs there right now, in spite of the fact that the gate to the Baywalk remains locked and the applicant has a roving security guard. In spite of those two measures, boats and jet skis are routinely vandalized, damaged, and stolen on our property. The South Bay Club representatives that are on this hearing right now have similar complaints. So again, we would ask you all not to link the two together. We had simply asked you all to move forward with a motion accepting our alternative harmonization plan, understanding that it would be subject to a maintenance agreement between the applicant and the city, and not link it unfairly to the Baywalk. I'm happy to answer any questions you all might have. If you'd like to see the presentation again from JJ, we can certainly show you the slides again to refresh your recollection. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you, Michael. And I think we're pretty familiar with the concept. I think fundamentally what we're talking about is the opening of the Baywalk. Let's hear from the public. Bernie Sandoval's next. Bernie? Bernie, you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go. Now we can. Go for it.
Sorry, I was in a bad connection here, bad area. I just wanted to reiterate some of the points that were being made by Michael and to stress that we've had several commissioners come and visit the property. I think the only one that hasn't made it out there, correct me if I'm wrong, is Mark. But the others came out and they understand. Anyone that can come out and visually walk it, it's pretty obvious that this opening this early would be detrimental and an unfair burden to this property owner and as well as the South Bay Club, which I'm going to go ahead and, excuse me, I have a frog in my throat. I'm going to go ahead and let Aileen and Louie from the South Bay Club, the president and vice president, speak on their behalf. But just to let everyone know, we've been communicating with commissioners and city staff, as well as coordinating some visits, site visits out there. And I think that all the neighboring buildings are in agreement with what Michael Larkin has proposed. So that being said, I'll hand it over to my neighbors.
Okay, thank you for that, Bernie. Next recognized is Tim. Tim?
Good morning, Commissioner, and thank you again for this opportunity to talk. Just to give some quick background information for this discussion today. Again, several years ago when Michael Greco was commissioner, at that time the commission voted to allocate $300,000 to design and permitting of the South Bay Club. So we would like to say public money is public benefit. We do realize they do have a gate, so we would like them to be good neighbors and to have that gate open during the day and they can close it in the evening. Similar to the Waverly. Waverly is another example that has a gate. They open it during the day. It's right there at 14th Street Parklet, and this is 10th Street Parklet. so we can have a similar scenario where everyone's a good neighbor and helps host the community for people who would like additional bay access. So again, we've already had good examples of that. And where I live at the Bentley Bay, we've had open access for our bay and the Floridian next door for several years. So we'd ask that everybody work towards that goal so that we can get closer to the South Fifth type mentality for open bay walk where everybody can proceed up and down. But in the meantime, instead of everybody putting up gates and keeping gates locked, we would prefer that you open the gate and then be better at host to the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Aileen is next.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we.
Okay, good. Never too sure. Aileen Fraser Upshon from the South Bay Club, currently on board of directors. We've said this before. We, you know, as a building, we are not against the Bay Walk being extended across our property line. In fact, we rather look forward to it. We'll solve some of our issues. But at the moment, having that Bay Walk end literally at a parking space in our garage is really detrimental to us in terms of security and the risk. We don't really want people, you know, in the daytime or the nighttime just lounging around there in that dead end. So we very much support Michael Gongora and his request to sort of maybe, you know, push the Bay Walk development in front of the South Bay Club and then make this Bay Walk a true Bay Walk where it can go across our property and join Southgate with the Floridian. We don't see the point in rushing this just to give people an extra few meters where that they have to turn around and go back, and it's misleading to them, and it could be a big security risk to people wandering around at night, or, you know, even daytime unsupervised with people that you don't necessarily want to meet. So we urge you to move forward with the South Bay Club and then open up the Bay Walk to be a true walk across all the properties. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Aileen. I think that's it for the public. Colleagues, let me, we heard from Commissioner Gore. Let me weigh in on this as well. First off, I'm extremely familiar with the Bay Walk. I spend a lot of time walking it, know it very, very well, and look forward to the day once we get our pedestrian bridge over Fifth Street, we can connect the beach to the bay. Part of what makes Miami Beach special is our efforts to be pedestrian friendly. First, 2 points. I support Commissioner Gongora, and I'd actually like to sort of formalize that when we get time to voting here, that we bring a motion back to this committee to take a holistic view of the Bay Walk and how we can accelerate it through the geo bond, any other gaps that we have, what we need to do. I think the Land Use Committee should have that conversation. That said, my position remains the same as it was when we voted on this last time. We directed the city and the applicant to discuss this issue and bring back something that was mutually agreed to. So unless I'm missing something, I don't think that's happened. Roy, I'm going to direct this to you or Assistant City Manager Hudak. Do we have an agreement that the administration today is recommending?
Commissioner, we have not entered into an agreement. We gathered the information as you directed us, and that's all we have to offer. The applicant has stated that they have an existing DRB order, and they've requested that we all respect it and follow it. The administration doesn't have any recommendation to change that.
Could you just clarify, doesn't have any recommendation to, I'm sorry, I didn't catch
the DRB order. The applicant represents they have a DRB order that they are to comply with, and the administration at this point does not have a recommendation to change a DRB order.
Okay. Thank you for that, Roy. So, colleagues, for me, this is one property there are two issues. I'm sort of where I was at the last time. Those issues need to be mutually addressed, because otherwise what I promise you is we'll take action today and we'll be staring at this at a point and we're going to be left with an open problem. The Baywalk is a community asset. We are here to make a pedestrian-friendly neighborhood. Other buildings like the Waverly, which I know extremely well, you can't go, you haven't been able to go anywhere for that, but it's been open. So I am not supporting the harmonization unless it is tied to the Bay. Commissioner Arriola, we haven't heard from you.
Chair, it sounds like we might be 2-1 on this one. I'm supportive of the alternative harmonization, but I do want to delink the two. I just think that while I'm desperate to see the Baywalk completed, there's sufficient concern from neighbors that they don't want this. And so, you know, I know we all try to listen to residents, and they've sort of made their concerns known, at least to me and today. So I will de-link the two.
Okay, so we got one de-link, one non-link. Commissioner Gongora?
I'm okay with separating the harmonization as well.
Okay, so just to summarize, let's show that done. Two votes in favor of de-linking, one vote not in favor. And then Commissioner Gongora, I'm just going to sort of formalize what you said. I think we should have a separate discussion about the Baywalk and how we can accelerate its completion. I think that was the essence of your motion.
Yes, I would like to accelerate the Baywalk because I would like to get done the entire strip rather than just open this one little block. So yes, I would like to make a motion from this committee that we support expediting the Baywalk and moving that up in the GO bond prioritization.
Yeah, I think that's great. And just if I could add to it, I'd like to actually see the outcome of those discussions and have that presented at land use. I'd like to see what's left, what the plan is. You okay with that?
Sure.
And Mr. Chairman, just so with regard to the acceptance of the alternative harmonization plan, I assume this will now travel up to City Commission for a discussion amongst the whole body of the mayor and commissioners for the final acceptance of the plan in March. Is that correct?
Let me go to our capable team here and see, would that be the next step to our city administration or to the city attorney's office, Ned?
Commissioner, with one caveat, it would be appropriate to go to the commission for approval, but it wouldn't be final approval. We're still at concept level, and we couldn't recommend a final approval until the designs are complete and our engineers have reviewed them.
I think that's very fair, and I've talked about that with the director, and I'm comfortable with city commission approval of a concept plan, because that makes perfect sense to me.
Okay. So we have those two separate actions coming out of this. Let me just say, Roy, do you have sort of what you need, everything clear at this point in terms of next steps?
Yes, sir, we do.
Wonderful. Colleagues, I believe that was the last item on the agenda. So a couple hours and 20 minutes, I think we made our way. Let me just see if anyone has anything else left. Assistant City Manager Hudak, anything you want to add before we sort of wrap?
We're good, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I think we'll quit while we're all ahead. Thank you to my colleagues. Thank you to all of the city team to get us started. Thank you for public comment, and hope everyone has a wonderful day. Take care now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.